listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
It was when I watched the Back to the Future movie series that I first realized movies had the power to teach the masses spiritual ideas, and they were doing just that. As part of Marty McFly's time travel, that was played by Michael Fox, he attends high school with his own parents during their younger years, and while he's there, he makes a single change in what's happening in their lives, and then when he returns to the present time, which was in the late 80s then, the family's entire life situation is different. There are different attitudes, different employment for his father, people dressing very differently than they were just when he went on his time travel. Everything is different. Well, the conscious creation principle is that we're constantly setting laws into motion for the future. And what we do in this moment sets things up for our future moments. And there it was, happening in the movie, teaching people this important principle, but from my observation, with most people not consciously realizing what they were witnessing and learning. My guest on Full Power Living today is talking with me about consciously created cinema, as we look at this phenomenon of movies helping viewers learn that we create our own lives, as well as how the creation process works. So welcome to Full Power Living, where we focus on helping you in the world understand the power and importance of human emotions. We have chats on both of our broadcast sites, blogtalkradio.com/FPL and emotionalpro.com. And we also have a toll-free number, 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. So feel free to call us as well. Brent Marchant is my guest today, and he's a lifelong movie fan and a longtime student of metaphysics. He's author of the newly released Consciously Created Cinema, The Movie Lover's Guide to the Law of Attraction, which is a reader-friendly look at how the practice of conscious creation, which is also known as the Law of Attraction, is illustrated through film. Now, he's also the author of a preceding work on the similar topic, Get the Picture, Conscious Creation Goes to the Movies, which we discussed when, Brent, you were on the show before. He maintains an ongoing blog about metaphysical cinema and other self-empowerment topics, and he's a featured contributor on Arts and Entertainment for Vivid Life magazine, for Smart Women's Empowerment, and for New Age magazine. I'm putting the URLs for these on our chats for you so you can check them out yourself. And his additional writing credits include contributions to BeliefNet, Library Journal, and Master Heart magazine, among many, many others. He's a frequent guest on various internet and broadcast radio shows, as well as a regular presenter at Conscious Creation conferences. And Brent Marchant, welcome to Full Power Living once again. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me back on the show, Eileen. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, and I really enjoyed reading your book, too. We'll be talking about that.
Oh, thank you.
In my work as a psychotherapist, I find myself telling people over and over and over again that life is lived from the inside out. And what I mean by that is that what we think about or focus on and believe inside of ourselves is what we manifest on the outside. And I think I saw that presented over and over and over in many ways in consciously created cinema. I want you to talk with us a little bit. You say that conscious creation is something each human being does in collaboration with all that is, which we also could call God or Allah or the universe or whatever. Tell us, when you're talking about conscious creation, what are you talking about?
Well, just what you said yourself in terms of the idea that what appears on the outside originates from within. Conscious creation has to do with the idea of how we take the power of our beliefs and intents and we combine them with the power of all that is, or God or the goddess or whatever term you want to use, to create the reality that we experience. And for better or worse, we get what we concentrate upon.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a nice summary. Very nice.
Yeah, I mean, you can describe it in many different ways. You can say something as simple as life is what you make of it, or thoughts become things, or you could start getting a little more technical, I guess, and say things like, you know, you create your own reality or something like that. But no matter how you phrase it, the sentiment is really the same in each of those cases.
So in essence, though, in conscious creation, each of us humans, or we humans collectively, have our job to do, and we're collaborating with that, all that is. And I think a lot of people may be concerned about what exactly is our part. I mean, we all have some idea that all that is, the Creator, God, Goddess, that puts the energy behind it. That does the, it's sort of like, that does the magic. What's our part?
Our part is to come up with the various expressions of existence and physical reality that we desire to see manifested. And that can include, well, it basically includes everything that appears in our reality, from the relationships that we have, to the work that we do, to the art that we create, just really everything across the board. I often describe conscious creation as something where, if you set about to create your reality, you need to understand that you're going to create the totality of it and not just certain bits and pieces. In other words, you can't come along and say, well, I created this, but that just happened to me. You know, it's not like it's a salad bar where you can go up and pick and choose what you want to do. So it applies to essentially everything that we experience. But the most important thing is to become more, as the term implies, conscious of what it is that we're creating ultimately. And that's where the process calls upon us to take better stock of exactly what beliefs and what intents that we're holding, because they're going to drive and determine what ultimately materializes.
Well, I think what's really brilliant about what you've been working on is that even if you don't accept that we create our own lives, when you go to the movies and you see movies that involve these conscious creation principles, you're still going to get introduced to the concept, and you're going to do it in such a way that your mind is actually not blocked against receiving the idea, which makes movies this wonderful vehicle, because we open our mind to the experience and the imagery and the music and the dialogue, and we're not being vigilant to protect ourselves against ideas that we might not want or that might scare us. What do you say to that?
Well, I would say that's very true. I mean, you know, throughout the ages, whenever we've been learning about topics related to metaphysics or philosophy or spirituality or any of those, highfalutin fancy concepts, we've nearly always drawn upon the power of story as a means of conveying ideas and setting examples that we can draw from to learn particular principles and concepts. And to me, movies are basically the latest incarnation of that particular principle. They set examples that we can look at and draw from to use as inspiration for how we conduct our own lives and how we go about creating the reality that we experience. And the one advantage that they have, I think, maybe over some of these more traditional methods is with the technology that we've got with, you know, images and sound, I think the messages tend to get, you know, enhanced that much more and have so much of a greater impact for the people who are viewing them that it really drives the points home. And I think that's important because, you can come away from the experience having more aha moments that you can then draw upon, you know, when you go about to create what you want to experience.
You know, when I first caught on to this, I had this idea of, oh my gosh, the movies are being used to soften us up, if you will, to receive these concepts that maybe people weren't quite ready for yet, but they, you know, like the Back to the Future that you set laws into motion, it's just like in there so that when you do encounter it later on, it's something that's familiar. I'm suddenly aware of that, the concept that if you're not familiar with something, you might not even see it.
I think that's an excellent way of describing it, and I think that's really what movies have done. And in particular, over the past, say, 20 years or so, with the rise of more forms of alternative thinking and alternative metaphysics and spirituality, you're increasingly seeing movies do that even more, because you have, you know, a vehicle for helping to portray them, to bring the concepts into being. And also, you know, you have a lot of people in the business themselves who use this material in the way they go about and create their own art to begin with. So in many ways, it's almost kind of a second nature for them to then actually create works of art on the screen that portray those principles as well.
Mm-hmm. So one of the questions that arose in my mind as I was reading your book and thinking about this topic is certainly things like movies like What the Bleep Do We Know and The Secret were designed in order to concern ourselves with these conscious creation principles. But the question is, how consciously were the other movies that you draw on in consciously created cinema, how conscious were those directors of bringing these elements in, or was that just part of the creative process that they immersed themselves in? I don't know if there's an answer, but I put it out
there.
Well,
I think it varies from individual to individual. I mean, there are certainly some movies that are in the book, such as The Quantum Activist and People Versus the State of Illusion and Something Unknown is Doing We Don't Know What, where the people who made them are very involved directly in this material. So they're very aware of it, and they very decidedly had that as an intent when they went about to make the movie. As for the fictional pieces that explore some of these ideas, then I think it varies a little bit more depending upon the actual people who are making the movies. I know there are some people who are very, very heavily into this material in a big way. You can look at people like, say, Shirley MacLaine, you know, who's
mm-hmm.
got a...
All right.
who's really quite well-versed in this material. But I think there are others who are a little more quiet about it, but are still very aware of it,
mm-hmm.
and they end up bringing it to bear in the works that they create. Now, mm-hmm. there may also be a number of instances where you have filmmakers who didn't have this intention in mind at all, at least consciously, but when you look at their finished product, the ideas are there nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
So when I write about movies like that, I'm not necessarily trying to, you know, put words into the mouths of the filmmakers. I'm just pointing out that these ideas are present nevertheless, and if you
right.
want a good example to draw from, these are movies to go look at.
Yeah, great. Well, you know, a lot of people say that creativity is channeling, and therefore, if it's time for all of us, which, you know, based on what's coming to me, what's being brought to me for broadcast on this radio program, we're in a time where it's time for us all to be learning and practicing conscious creation. And therefore, it stands to reason in my mind that it's time, and therefore those people who are channeling are, in one way or another, are going to be bringing that to us.
Well, I would definitely agree with that. When I wrote my first book back in 2007, Get the Picture, Conscious Creation Goes to the Movies, which I'm getting ready to release in a new edition shortly as well.
Oh, great.
Basically, that book pretty much wrote itself. And as I was at the computer, you know, typing away on the keyboard, I couldn't tell you where it was coming from. And it just really felt like it was flowing through me. And it was funny because I had heard people talk about that before I had written the book, in terms of how they created their books or created their paintings or whatever, that they didn't know where it came from. And I thought it was rather dubious, to be honest. I had to question it until I experienced it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that, yeah, this is how it works. And I think, you know, I had one of those light bulb moments going off where I realized that this is what I was choosing to create, and it was literally flowing through me like a conduit.
Mm-hmm.
And the result was the finished book.
Wow, that's an easy way to write. Now, you didn't even have to go to a course on writer's block. That's great. So, I mean, I see those a lot on the, you know, and I'm having that experience now too when I write. It's almost like, you know, those old linotype things where you see the letters or the words dropping into the little channel so that newspaper can be printed. That's the way it seems in my head. It's like I go to write on a topic and the words just fall into my fingers and come out on the paper. It's
that's a good analogy. Yeah, that's a very good analogy.
Yeah. So one of the things you've gone at this actually two or three different ways as I looked at it. When you were writing Consciously Created Cinema, you identified the movies that expose us to conscious creation in powerful and clear ways, and then you talk about them in terms of some of the most important key concepts that are involved in conscious creation, like the role of beliefs, choice, fear, courage, connection, and change. And because belief plays such a big role, and we talk about it over and over again, I want you to talk to us a little bit about belief and your favorite movies that you've discovered that help us to understand that what we believe is what we live.
Well, sure. One of the things that I did actually in both books is I tried to present kind of a roadmap for readers in terms of explaining how the conscious creation process works, taking them from the point where they know practically little to nothing about it to the point where they can become, you know, really proficient practitioners of it. And in each case, the concept of faith and beliefs are something that I talk about very early on in the process, simply because it's so crucial to the functioning of how the process plays out. And in the current book, the new book, as I did in all the chapters in it, I picked five movies that helped to illustrate the particular concept of faith and beliefs. And in this case, I presented the movies Doubt, The X-Files, I Want to Believe, Higher Ground, The Other Dream Team, and Safety Not Guaranteed, all of which explore the concept of faith and belief from one particular angle or another. And in what I did for each of those movies in the book, as I did for all of the movies in the book, is I give readers a plot summary talking about what the movie is about. And then I go into explaining how it particularly relates to the chapter's theme. Again, drawing examples from material in the movie to illustrate the principles that I'm talking about. So this way, readers are getting kind of a double dose of information about the movie. They're getting not just the nuts and bolts information about the storyline, but they're also getting information about its relevance from a conscious creation standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And beliefs is something that I keep coming back to, again, over and over and over again in the book, simply because, again, they're really the starting point in terms of what makes the process work.
Mm-hmm. So what I tell people as a psychotherapist is that what you experience basically is telling you what you believe if you're not aware of it. And I think somewhere in your book I noted that you also early on were reading the Seth Materials and the Nature of Personal Reality, which is where I first ran into that concept also. So
yes, that was really where I got the core of my conscious creation training, was reading the Seth books from years ago. And I drew upon them a little more heavily in Get the Picture than I do in Consciously Created Cinema, but I do mention in the Consciously Created Cinema introduction that that's really where I got my start with these ideas. And even though Jane Roberts and Seth were sort of the originators of these ideas, many people have picked up on them since
mm-hmm.
then, and
mm-hmm.
they've elaborated upon them and explored them further and, you know, gone into some of the additional details that I've done myself here in this new book.
Right. You know, like Bruce Lipton, whom you mentioned, and
yeah.
who has also been on this show, The Biology of Belief is the name of his book. Well, when I am working with conscious creation, I find that perspective has a lot to do with how we view our lives and the events that happen. And in your in Consciously Created Cinema, you talk about the movie A Serious Man as an example of a movie that we can either you know, that shows us that we can either take the smaller, more materialistic view of life, or we can maintain a larger view of ourselves as expanded souls. So I thought I'd ask you to talk just a bit about that so you can illustrate how you work with it to our, for our listeners.
Sure. Perspective is important because in many ways it's almost like a an overriding belief template that we draw upon in terms of how we form our beliefs and ultimately then how we experience the reality that we create. And in A Serious Man, we have a character who seems to be continually beset by one calamity after another. And yet, and it causes him to question, you know, well, why me? Why this? But invariably, there's always something that comes out of it that's a silver lining. And then he goes and says to himself, oh, well, I guess things do work out for me. Of course, no sooner does he have that when he has another challenge come along.
Real life.
So and I mean, it really kind of presents himself with an opportunity for asking himself, okay, exactly how do I want to approach life? You know, do I want to go through with a perspective of negativity? Do I want to go through with a perspective of positivity? Or do I want to go through it with understanding that the reason I'm here and living this life and having a consciously created experience is that I'm learning various life lessons. And in doing so, I'm drawing to myself the conditions necessary for me to be able to get those lessons and have those experiences and get the realizations from them that I can take then to move on and, you know, have more new experiences and hopefully a rewarding life that's filled with all kinds of experiences that he would not have had had he not had those experiences in the first place.
Right, right. And that's a wonderful thing to know, is that whatever is happening in your life is conspiring, as it were, to help you to grow. We're up to our first break today. I'm talking with cinema buff and student of metaphysics, Brent Marchant, about ideas and information from his newest book, Consciously Created Cinema, The Movie Lover's Guide to the Law of Attraction. We'll be looking at multidimensionality, transformation, and transcendence coming up on Full Power Living. We'll be right back. How would you parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student? As a host for an exchange student, you'd have five main jobs to do. Those are the same five jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of The Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download The Exchange Student Model for Parenting today.
All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements.
First, I want to ask you listening to sign up at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list, so I can share with you details of upcoming shows, and I'm involved in a number of projects, especially involving families and children, which I'd like to tell you about, and that has to do with transforming our world. And if you can't listen to Full Power Living live on Thursdays, remember that we archive on Blog Talk Radio and Emotional Pro, and you can also subscribe to our feed on iTunes. And I want to thank you for helping us with our mission of awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotions. Next week, Pamela Ostley is taking us to your greater self and beyond as we talk about infinite you. Pamela's offering to help us learn to see auras and feel energy fields and use parallel universes to change our life and, if you like, to talk to people on the other side. She says developing such abilities can create more trust, compassion, freedom, and joy in your life. That's Thursday, October 9th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Well, my guest today is Brent Marchant. He's the author of Consciously Created Cinema, The Movie Lover's Guide to the Law of Attraction. And previously, I interviewed Brent about his seminal book, Get the Picture, Conscious Creation Goes to the Movies, which, thank you for telling us, Brent, you're in the process of revising. And I just, when I was reading your book, I just want to say, Brent, that I felt like I was getting to know you. The reaction I had was that you're clear, you're courageous, you're powerful, and you're compassionate, and I found myself liking you as I was reading. And this may sound a little unusual, I don't know, but that's what happened for me. And I think it's a bit of what we're talking about, because these are like the parts of conscious creation, the things that go together to help us create the lives we want to live. So I wanted to ask you, when you practice conscious creation over time, do you inculcate those qualities, those abilities in you, do you think?
Yes, I think you do. And thank you, by the way, for those really very kind words. I really appreciate that. It's interesting. One of the things that people who know me really well, when they've read both of my books, have said that they can actually hear me saying the words.
Yes.
When they're reading it. Yeah, and that's really the intent behind why I write the way that I do and the approach that I take in terms of how I bring this material into print. But it's also very much me in terms of how I take these ideas and I use them to create my daily life. And, it's created a much better and much more fulfilling existence by having these ideas in my life and making use of them than certainly what I had available to me before.
Uh-huh. And it's really nice. It helps you so much to be able to... Your life goes smoother when you're following these conscious creation principles, because you don't take it so seriously and get so lost in it. You go, oh, okay, so there's something I need to learn here, or something I need to become aware of. Let me take a look where it is, and maybe ask for help, and then what do I want to do with this once I see it?
Well, that's true, too, especially when you're coming up against challenges in your life, because it would be very easy to play the part of the victim. Mm-hmm. And to curse the heavens and to say, well, darn it, I didn't ask for this. What's this doing here? Yet, in reference to the movie we just talked about, A Serious Man, it's important because a lot of times there'll be a very fortuitous synchronicity that will come along that will have to take you to the next step. But it takes you by way of this, weird sort of challenge that comes along in the first place. Which, whatever the reason is behind that, you can't always necessarily tell, but sometimes it's because it helps you to appreciate, the benevolence of the universe in mm-hmm. bringing you what it is that you're intending to create for yourself by going through this little bit of a challenge first. If you just sort of had it handed to you all the time, you might grow complacent about it, or you might grow bored or unappreciative. Whereas sometimes having that kind of a little bit of a challenge really makes you get, fills you with a greater sense of gratitude and appreciation for what it is that the universe is helping to conspire to create with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really, really true. A big issue in my work, Brent, as a psychotherapist, is about change. I have found over the years that we all seem to resist change. And to the point where most people don't change until the pain of where they are gets to be so great they think it couldn't be any worse if they took the risk of making the change. And I saw in your book that you said, given that conscious creation maintains we're all in a constant state of becoming, there's an inherent suggestion that change is an integral part of our existence. When conditions become frustrating, that in itself suggests our prevailing reality and the beliefs that inspire it are no longer serving us, that the universe is prompting us to move on to something new. And I note that the movie, as you described it, The Kids Are All Right, seems a really great exposé of this issue. So I'd like to have you talk about that a little bit. About
sure.
Change.
Yeah, change is a topic that I covered in both of my books, simply because, as you noted, that conscious creation maintains that we are in a constant state of becoming. It's almost as if our existence is like the image that you see at the end of a kaleidoscope when you look into it. You know, you're always going to have a new image the more you keep turning the barrel. And that's, I think, you know, what part of what we're here for is we're here to gain new experiences and new ways of manifesting physical reality. And if we didn't do that, we'd stagnate, and I think that would, you know, we'd get bored with that, and, you know, it really kind of defeats the purpose of why we incarnated in the first place. As for the movie The Kids Are All Right, that's certainly an important example of illustrating that, because you have a lesbian couple that has had a couple of kids, and they reach the point where one of them is turning 18 and wants to find out about her biological background.
Right.
And by meeting the father who ended up providing who is a sperm donor for her birth, it brings a whole new element into the household and the relationships of all the characters to one another that really shakes things up quite a bit. But they needed to be shaken up because the situation was growing kind of stagnant. And the characters needed to develop new understandings and appreciations for one another. It's not that the situation was necessarily going to grow worse than what they had before. It was just going to be different. It needed to get to a different point. It was time for change to come in and infuse some new energy and some new life in the relationships that everybody had with each other. And I think that's important. That I think we need to all understand that in terms of why we usher change into our own particular lives. When we grow stale and stagnant, you know, we start to wither and rot. And to remain vital and happy and fulfilled, we need to keep moving forward and seeing that change come about in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, we just a few weeks back hosted Anat Baniel, who worked with Moshe Feldenkrais and does a body movement and helping children in particular that have cerebral palsy to be able to walk and move their bodies. And in reading her material, she's saying that just doing the same thing the same way over and over again can cause us to rigidify in our bodies and cause us to get older. And I'm sure the same is true of our concepts and our beliefs, that we need to refresh them, if you will, to use a computer term, periodically.
Well, I think that's very true. You know, one of my favorite lines from a movie is in Woody Allen's Annie Hall, when Woody Allen and Diane Keaton were on the verge of breaking up. She says to him that, you know, I don't think this is working anymore. And he said, yeah, a relationship is kind of like a shark. It needs to keep moving forward or it ends up dying. And he goes, I think what we have on our hands here is a dead shark.
Oh, dear. Yeah, right. I remember that. It was a long time ago that he made that movie. So there are a number of precepts that you interweave in your book, and I want to talk about some that stand out to me.
Okay.
First of all, I think most people are in agreement that we're all in this constant state of becoming, but I think the idea that we're innately multidimensional beings may be new, and I want you to talk about what it means, and in terms of Cloud Atlas, which gets a really great review from you. It's a one movie I jumped out of my chair going, I want to see this movie, based on what you had to say about it.
Well, our multidimensional selves, it's a concept that applies in two ways. In terms of our physical existence that we know most readily, the life that we lead right now, what I like to sometimes call the localized self. We each come to discover, I think, through the course of our lives, that we're multifaceted. We have different selves that reside within us that reflect different capabilities and sensibilities and talents and so forth that we follow through and experience during the course of our lives. And they don't all necessarily make themselves readily apparent at once. They may unfold at different points in our lives. But I think that's part of the wonder and the joy that's really so exciting about being in physical existence, is that we get to learn about all these different things that we can do that we didn't know that we were capable of previously. And there's also the idea of multidimensional selves in a greater sense, where it applies more on a spiritual level, where there's portions of our souls that end up fanning out across time or across dimensions. And they're all sort of doing the same thing that we're doing here, but they're doing it differently wherever they happen to be. They're learning different life lessons in a different temporal or dimensional context. And all of them are taking the information, the experiences that they get from those particular incarnations back to their source from which they came from. It's almost like they're doing reconnaissance in a way, in different time frames and different dimensional planes. And one of the things I think that those of us who are the localized selves are just now beginning to become aware of is that that concept exists. And we're also having to come to terms with the idea that things that we do perhaps in one particular incarnation are going to have effect that's spread out across all the other ones, almost as if it's karma or crossover influences. And the movie Cloud Atlas really does a wonderful, wonderful job of helping to explore that idea. It's a movie that has six parallel storylines running through it, and it has a number of characters who end up appearing in each of these different stories, and how it explores the ideas of what we do in one lifetime may very well have impact across time and space and affect another one. Somebody who is, say, the hero in one lifetime may end up being the villain in another one, or vice versa. And it gives all of these people's soul characters an opportunity to learn different things about the human experience. And it's a really rich and very rewarding movie in so many ways. And really, I was really disappointed that it didn't get a better reception in the theaters than it did, but it was certainly one of the best movies I've seen in recent years.
Yeah, that's really great. And, you know, in that explanation, you bring up another point that struck me as I was reading Consciously Created Cinema, and that is people's concern that sometimes a person who is a hero in one life is a villain in the other life, in another life, and why that is, what it does for the development of our multidimensional self.
Well, I think it's important that we have all these different experiences, because a lot of times we can't appreciate one without having had the other. I mean, it's often been said that you can't appreciate the sunshine unless you have a rainy day, and vice versa. So Cloud Atlas helps to illustrate how having all these different experiences teaches us about these different kinds of experiences that we're each capable of having. And by going through them, it gives us the opportunity to say, do we want to repeat them again at some point, or do we say, okay, we've had the experience, we can put it behind us now, we can move on and do something different. And I think, again, that's something that we are just now beginning to become aware of, and hopefully we'll learn from it and carry the idea forward for ourselves to create more fulfilling lives.
Yes, yes. And that's really, in this lifetime, that's the whole point of looking at conscious creation, which I know you emphasize in your book, but I want to be sure to bring out here on the show, which is, it's all about, let's have a better life, let's have the life we really feel good about living, let's do our learning and our growing so that we can usher more joy into our constant experience, correct?
Yes, absolutely, and it really is about the learning and the lessons. I can't emphasize that point nearly enough, because a lot of times I think we tend to downplay that. You know, we look at, for example, a negative experience and just think, well, what's the value in that? Well, mm-hmm. you know, look at what you get out of it. I mean, you might very well decide that as awful as it was, you know now that it's not something that you want to repeat. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like it's like sticking your hand in a flame. You know, the first time you do it, you might not be thinking what's going to happen, but after you do it, you sure as heck don't want to do it again.
Absolutely, absolutely. Another thing that I like, and I'd like us to bring out, is the idea that one of the precepts you talk about is that we live in a safe universe. Will you talk about what you mean by that?
Sure. The safe universe concept is the idea that essentially the universe isn't going to present us with anything that we can't handle. Even if it seems grim or gruesome or challenging, it's meant to provide us with an opportunity again for learning and for life lessons and for experience. And the universe is not going to bring you something that you cannot withstand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important, I think, that we recognize that, because when we are in the throes of some kind of challenging situation, then it gives us hope, it gives us courage, it gives us fortitude, strength to carry on. And it also, I think, helps to open up our thinking to consider possibilities that we maybe hadn't looked at before for how to resolve them, kind of the idea of learning how to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite spiritual teachers, Jean Houston, I think put it really well years ago when she said that these kinds of experiences increase our, as she called it, response ability, which I thought was a really wonderful way of describing it, because all of a sudden now you begin to think in terms of, I could do this, or I could do this, or I could do this to resolve this situation and move forward, whereas if you hadn't had that experience, yeah, you might not think of it in those terms.
Right. When my husband and I were traveling in Australia in 2008, I realized one day that our plane was reserved for a day later than we were supposed to be on a tour in the Sydney area. We were in Adelaide at the time. And I pointed it out to my husband. Now, my husband is a very methodical, in-the-world person, and he went, "Oh, no. There's not going to be anything we can do about that." And I said to him, wait, let me work my magic before you go there. You just keep doing what you're doing and let me work on this. And I came up with some ideas that not only got us booked on a plane just an hour different from when I thought we were going to be going, but also we got a $25 refund.
So, there you go. That's exactly it.
Yeah, so that brings that up. Now, interestingly, we have a daughter who works in the jungles in Ecuador with a nonprofit organization called Pachamama. And when Avatar came out, they made a point of showing Avatar to many of the indigenous groups. And they were not totally, many people in that group were not totally enamored of it. But I enjoyed it, and I think it draws our attention to a lot of issues like interconnectedness, how the world that we experience originates from inside of us, and how we need to consciously address what we're doing and have integrity and take responsibility. Talk some about some of those issues.
Sure. Avatar was a really, it was almost kind of a challenge for me to figure out exactly where to slot that movie in the book, because it could have gone into so many different chapters. It definitely could have gone into the concept of connection, and it definitely could have gone into the concept of fear and courage. But I put it in the chapter related to integrity, simply because we have a character here who is faced with a very clear choice in terms of how he responds to his circumstances. And I think that's really important in terms of illustrating what each of us needs to do if we want to create the best results with how we use conscious creation. The more we can operate from a standpoint of integrity, the better off we're going to be, simply because we're being our best and truest selves with ourselves when we're going through the process and using that as a principle that we apply to it. It really comes down to the, you can embody it in the notion of, you know, to thine own self be true. You know,
mm-hmm.
really is a great way of summarizing it. And it's something that is something that the lead character in Avatar needs to address if he wants to be able to get the result that he's happiest with.
Right, right. was a beautiful movie. Well, we're up on to our second break now. Because we're in a time of great transformation with our planet and ourselves, I want to talk about transformation and transcendence after our break, Brent.
My pleasure.
Okay, so we're talking today with Brent Marchant and his new book, Consciously Created Cinema, which is available in print and ebook formats on all major online retailers is where you can get them. Be sure to consider calling us at 888-498-0570. Do more than consider. Give us a call, 888-498-0570. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
Eileen Dillon is a certified senior life mentor with Accessing Universal Intelligence. She's available to conduct mentoring sessions with you to help you understand, change, and evolve using the advice of your own higher self. You can be anywhere in the world. Sessions are conducted through Skype. For more information about these life mentoring sessions, fees, and how to register, go to www.emotionalpro.com and click on the mentoring link at the top. Get personally tailored assistance with your toughest life questions. Visit mentoring@emotionalpro.com today.
Welcome back to Full Power Living, where we've been talking with Brent Marchant, who's a student of metaphysics and a cinema buff and critic, author of Consciously Created Cinema, The Movie Lover's Guide to the Law of Attraction, which is available in ebook and I think it's a paperback version. So, Brent, I'm stuck with which direction I want to go right now.
Follow your gut.
Really. So one of the things that I didn't quite understand that you talk about is something you call value fulfillment. I probably understand it, but I don't use those words. Can you tell me what you're talking about that in that and what movie might best, or, you know, which one you, one of the ones that you picked to illustrate that?
Sure. Value fulfillment is a concept that was first raised in the Jane Roberts and Seth material. And it has to do with the concept of learning how to live your life in a sense that is allowing you to be your truest, best self for mm-hmm. your own benefit and for the benefit of others around you. And in that respect, I think one of the best examples I can think of, not so much from this book, actually from my first book, Get the Picture, is the movie, the classic, It's a Wonderful Life,
mm-hmm.
Which features a character who really has to come to realize that he has been serving his value fulfillment all along, even though he didn't realize it at the time, has grand aspirations that don't always fulfill, you know, become fulfilled, but that he's also doing great things for other people, and by doing that, he's enriching himself as well. So that combination of traits, he's really living out value fulfillment in the truest sense of the phrase.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the, what was in the back of my head here, which is a little bit off the beaten track, and if you're not comfortable answering it, you can say so. We keep talking about conscious creation and conscious creation principles. If somebody is listening to the program and they don't know a lot about this, do you have a suggestion for some good places for people to learn more about conscious creation?
Well, I think the Jane Roberts and Seth books are a great place to start. The first two books in the series, Seth Speaks and The Nature of Personal Reality, are both terrific starting points for learning how the process works. The formats of those books are a little bit different from what you might find in a lot of other texts because they're presented in session format and not just as a straight narrative. but they do get the ideas across, and they help to explain by way of example exactly what concepts are being addressed in learning about how the process works.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they certainly were amazing for me. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I really liked The Nature of Personal Reality because that's where he actually talked about the role of beliefs and set me off as a therapist for years saying, okay, well, you had this experience, then ask yourself the question, what would I have to believe in order to have this experience? Let's work backwards. And it worked beautifully.
And that really is key for understanding how conscious creation works and what the point is of developing a more conscious outlook about yourself and how the process works, because it really does get you to ask yourself, what is it that I really believe? Because mm-hmm. that will then determine why you're experiencing what you're experiencing, for better or worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a really profound experience of that more than 10 years ago. Within 2 or 3 years, I had an opportunity, Brent. I call it an opportunity, but two people from two sides of my family were in the hospital with serious issues. And I participated, I had a key role in setting things up, and then I was excluded from going into the hospital or the hospital room with this person, and everybody else wasn't. And it was painful for me until I sat down and said, okay, this has happened twice. It's clear that it's a belief I have. Let's see what it is. And what had happened was when I was a little girl, like 2 years old, my birth mother was not taking good care of my sister and me, and we ran the streets hungry and unclothed and dirty and so forth. And neighbors would take us in, and they would feed us and put some of their own children's clothes on us, and it would be very comfortable and nice to be taken care of for a while. But inevitably, those people would say, well, you don't really live here. You're not really part of this family. Mm-hmm. It's time for you to go home to your own home. And so that's what was happening. I was an integral part of these situations, and then there came a point where I was told, you don't really belong here. You don't really, you're not really in this family. And when I was able to unravel it, I created a new belief that I'm a member of everybody's human family, and I'm welcome to stay for as long as I want until or unless I decide to go. And it changed everything. In fact, one person within a couple of weeks called and apologized to me for my having been excluded.
Amazing how that works, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I had something like that myself a couple of years ago where I had a bit of a health challenge. And it was a minor cardiac problem, and it also came at a point where my relationship was just beginning to move to a new stage, and it was going deeper than any of my previous relationships had gone. And basically, if it was going to move forward, I had to remove the blockage to my heart.
Oh, wow.
In every sense of the word.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that must have been wonderful in the outcome.
Oh, it was. It was.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. And, I mean, I felt tremendous ever since as well.
Right.
Because it really was a clearing on multiple levels.
Right. And I can really hear the courage. That's something we haven't really talked about, but you do talk about in your book. The courage it takes to go to remove the blockage from your heart as opposed to suffer and be a victim, you know?
Yes.
I really appreciate that. Yeah. So how wonderful to hear that testimonial. Well, interesting. I was going to ask you a question about transformation because it seems like we are all going through transformation right now. And I think one of the films you list for transformation is The Blind Side. And what I note about that movie myself is that Sandra Bullock's character shows how well things work out when we embrace the opportunity for change and for sharing our heart. And that's essentially what you were just telling us, too.
Absolutely. And in this case, it would, you have, you know, multiple characters who are benefiting from the experience. And, you know, I think in many ways, too, as an actress, she benefited from it personally because it was the first time that she had been nominated for an Oscar, and she won also.
Wow.
So, it was really, I think, a very transformative experience for not only for her character, but for her personally as well.
That's so interesting. Talk about multidimensional personalities.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's another book for you, Brent, where you talk about what effect entering multidimensional personalities, other personalities, what effect that has on the actors and actresses who do it. That's a very interesting one.
Well, as long as they keep making movies, there's always going to be material for me to write about.
Right. I have that in my profession, too. So then you say that transcendence is like transformation, but it's on steroids. And I note that things are changing or transforming very quickly today, and yet our beliefs may hold us back. I was working with a young girl of my acquaintance just a few weeks ago, and she had something she needed to forgive herself for. And we talked about it one day, and then I talked with her another day, and I said, "Have you decided that you want to forgive yourself?" And she said to me, "Forgiveness takes a year." We don't have time for that, do we?
Well, I would think that forgiveness probably takes as long as each of us feels the need to have it take.
Uh-huh.
For some person, you know, for some people it might be a year. For some other people it might be instantaneously. I would certainly like to think, or would like to hope, that if, you know, the world is going to evolve, that the more expedient we can be about it, certainly the better.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that we can necessarily put any of these things on a timetable. One of the things that Seth mentioned in one of his books was the idea that conscious creation cannot be put on assembly line time.
Uh-huh.
So it takes as long as it takes for each of us, depending upon our individual needs and beliefs.
Right, right. Well, I'm not giving up on this young girl. So I want to say that I'm really impressed with the life and the vocation, Brent, that you have created for yourself. I imagine that you love going to work because you get to watch and enjoy interesting films. You get to give your opinion, which, if you're like me, you enjoy. You like to visit with the, you get to visit with the metaphysical aspects of all that you see, and you get to create your own schedule. So I just want to acknowledge you for this great job of conscious creation.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
Good. And I want to encourage you who are listening, when we finish the show, take a few minutes to contemplate how you can consciously create your life to support and fulfill you the way Brent has done. So, Brent, we need to tie things up here. Do you have any parting words, any special thing you'd like to offer to our listeners that you really want them to remember?
Well, one of the things I think that's really important to take away from the movies and to take away from my books is the idea that we should draw from the inspiration of the movies to write the scripts of our lives, because we really are creating our own scripts, and the more we can, you know, choose from the inspiration available to us to help fashion the beliefs that we need to create the reality that we find most satisfying and fulfilling, the better off we'll be in the long run.
Wow. I think I'm going to transcribe that and put it up on my wall. I think that's a really good thing.
You may quote me.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, it's really been a pleasure reading your book, contemplating these ideas, and having you with us on Full Power Living again. Brent, thank you so much for letting us know that you had a new book out, and do keep us on your list so we can talk with you again.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. It's been a great time.
Great. Next week, listen to Full Power Living as I talk with Pamela Ostley about your greater self and beyond, as we help you to identify your own infinite you. That's Thursday, October 9th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time or noon Eastern. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer. Thank you, Paul, for your work. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.